This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
Today, Taryn and I are diving into part one of our epic Southeast Asia trip, starting with our unforgettable time in Bali. We'll share how we flew business class around the world using points and miles, what it was like to stay in some of Bali's most incredible spots, and of course, all the insider tips on how we made it happen. Before we kick things off, don't forget to check out our blog post with tons of stunning photos taken from the trip. And if you want to catch all the highlights and behind-the-scenes videos, head over to our Instagram and see the highlights. We've got all the good stuff there, and links to everything will be in the show notes. Now, let's dive in.
Imagine pursuing your dreams of exploring the world's most exquisite destinations without the extravagant price tag. This is the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast, hosted by DeAndre Koch, founder of Boldly Go and an expert in financial planning as recognized by Forbes. This podcast is your bridge to a world where travel savvy meets luxury. With DeAndre's unique financial planning perspective, you'll glean insights on making the most of credit card loyalty points and miles for travel that doesn't just move you, but takes you places that you may have never thought possible. Expect the most up-to-date credit card strategies for points and miles, stories from successful professionals on how they integrate travel into their busy lives, and other captivating stories from around the globe. Whether you're a seasoned traveler or just starting out, join us in exploring the best of global travel and learn how to experience nearly free luxury travel around the world yourself. Your journey transforms here, igniting our revolution in the world of travel.
Welcome, everybody, to the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast. I am your host, DeAndre Koch, and I have my favorite co-host and lovely fiance with me today, Taryn Gisbert, and we've got some great, great stuff put together for you today. Before we begin, though, I just want to leave a quick reminder. If you haven't already, make sure to join our Facebook group. We've had some good conversations there around the points and miles. I often post links and updates to different things that are going on as well. So make sure to join our private Facebook group, and that link will be in the show notes. So today, we are bringing you another two-part episode, and this is going to go over the next 2 weeks. And so we'll be sharing with you guys our amazing three-week trip down to Southeast Asia, where we enjoyed time in Bali, we spent time in Singapore. So we're going to share where we went, what we did, as well as have a complete breakdown of the points that we used and how we maximized them for our trip. So you're going to want to listen in, not just this week, but next week also.
In this first episode, we'll go over how we got to Indonesia and cover your entire time in Bali. And then next week, we'll take you to Singapore to share with you the amazing time that we had there, as well as how we got back home, all while using points and miles.
So before we get into it, I just want to throw out some stats for you guys, because this trip was pretty involved. There was a lot of moving pieces to it, and it took a lot of time to put together something like this. So here's the stats. 10 flights total, right? We actually circumnavigated the world. So we actually, when I say that, we went around the entire globe on this trip. So we left the East Coast of the United States, Norfolk, Virginia, where we live, flew across the country. So we flew towards the direction of California, and that's how we got to Bali. And then we, leaving Bali and Singapore, we flew from there, continuing in the same direction. So passing Qatar, passing London, crossing the Atlantic back home. So 10 flights total, 4 to Bali, 1 to Singapore, 5 to get home. All but 2 of those flights were in business class, and we stopped in 7 countries total. We visited 9 lounges, including one of the top business class lounges in the world. And here are the numbers, right? So transportation and lodging, the real cost between those two things, $29,075 for everything. We actually spent $5,753 and 582,000 points. So just shy of 600,000 points. And I want to make a note that about 4,000 of that spend of that $5,700 was spent staying in places that we either couldn't use points for or we chose not to use points for.
Also, something important to point out, we spent $5,700, as you said, total. And if you look at two round trip economy tickets alone, just the flights to Bali can easily be $2,500 to $3,000 per person, especially from where we live and with another flight.
Yeah. So we played the game right and we succeeded very well. So our true redemption, and so what I mean by true redemption is really only factoring in the parts that we actually redeem with points. The actual cost of that piece was closer to about $24,000, and we used the same 582,000 points, but we only spent $1,160. So we got $24,000 of value and only spent $1,100. And if you go to the Boldigo website, we do have a point redemption calculator there. And that's what I use myself to make sure that I'm redeeming my points and the points that we have for the best value that we can. And when you do the math, basically it works out that this whole trip was about a 3.9, let's just call it a 4 cent redemption. So we got 4x the value of our points. And if you recall in previous episodes, I always say, hey, you want to get 2x or better when you're redeeming your points, and ideally, right? There's certain trips that you're going to want to take that, hey, make your heart happy, do the thing. You're not going to get the best redemption, but it didn't matter because you had a great time. For us, this was a 4x. We've had trips where we've done 5, 6, 7, 8, almost 10x. This wasn't that, but we had an incredible time. I will say this, one thing I am upset about though is I looked for months to find the best options. And Taryn can tell you, I was always talking through, I think we could do this, I think we could do that. And it was really, really hard to find. And eventually, about, I think, 4 or 5 months maybe before our trip, I said, you know what, I'm just going to go ahead and go for these things that I found that I felt like would make sense. And the frustrating thing was pretty much within like 2 weeks after booking, all of the transfer bonuses that came out this spring happened. So the transfer bonuses to Virgin and British Airways and Air Canada and all the places, all these flights that we could have used to save some points happened. A little frustrating, but you know, it is what it is.
Yes, it was a lot to figure this one out. So let's get into it. Can you explain how did you get us to Bali?
All right. So we had an episode a few months ago about positioning flights, right? So that was one of the big things. And positioning flight is essentially sometimes we got to pay cash to get to the airport where we're going to use our points. And so the best point option that I had found at the time was going to be flying from San Francisco to Bali and with a layover in Taiwan. So we had to get to San Francisco first. So we paid cash to position ourselves to get from Norfolk to San Francisco. So in total, that was $850 for two of us in economy, and we did have a layover in Philadelphia to get there. Now, this was through American Airlines, and we both have American Airlines Platinum Pro status. We were hoping for the upgrade, but even with our Platinum Pro status, that long leg from Philly to San Francisco, I think we were like 15 on the upgrade list. So that didn't happen. However, the cool thing is with our status, we were able to, at the time of booking, we were able to book the exit row. So we had, you know, the extended extra like 2 or 3 feet of leg room. So it wasn't, you know, business class, but it was still comfortable. So that was one of our two flights that were not business class. And so we flew there to San Francisco. And one of the things to note, positioning flights can get a little bit scary, right? Because if you miss your positioning flight or there's an error, there's a huge delay, there's a cancellation, that's going to affect your ability to take the next flight. I wasn't super worried because we had a 13-hour layover. So we got into San Francisco sometime around 11:30 or 11-ish, and our flight out was like 1 a.m. So we had plenty of time. If crap hit the fan, we could have, you know, last minute bought a ticket, another flight, another airline to get to San Francisco. So I wasn't too worried about that. And so we Then had San Francisco to Bali, and that was on China Airlines. And so that was $5,000 per person in business class if we paid cash. And for that, we used 120,000 points and spent only $180 per person. How did we do it? Well, going through our searches and the mechanisms that we talk about, different sites to search, I used points, yeah, the most. We actually booked our flights through KLM or Flying Blue, and that they transfer to China Airlines. So basically, I had Amex points, transferred that to Flying Blue, and booked Flying Blue through, or sorry, let me take a step back. Booked China Airlines through Flying Blue, and that was with an Amex transfer. So originally, when we did all that, we had planned to explore San Francisco, but you know, I really had some concerns around baggage safety because I was going to get rent a car and we were going to just kind of drive around. No, Taryn, you haven't been to San Francisco before, so we were going to drive around and see. But if you've seen the news or YouTube, like, they are relentless there and do not care. They will smash your windows just to pull your seat back, to look in your trunk, to pop the trunk, to see if you have baggage in there. Didn't want to deal with all that. But also, Taryn, I know you were super tired because, I mean, our flight was really early. So this is something really cool. This is actually not planned, and this is actually not factored into the stats I gave earlier. On the flight, from Philly to San Francisco, we were both tired. I looked and saw that there was actually a Hyatt, a Grand Hyatt, that's actually built into the San Francisco airport. And so on the flight, I redeemed 20,000 Chase points, I redeemed 20,000 Hyatt points, and I transferred from Chase in order to do that to get us a one night stay at the Hyatt. And we have Explorer status. And what was great is the room was ready at 11 a.m. before we even landed, which was awesome. So we landed at the San Francisco airport and just took the tram to the Hyatt and checked in and had lunch. And Taryn, I'll let you share what your thoughts are on that, because I know we were both pretty exhausted just to get to San Francisco.
Yeah, I was a lot more tired than I thought I would be when we got there. And I was very grateful that we had a beautiful Hyatt to be. And I just really remember being able to take a shower, and that was fabulous. And then I think I just crashed. But that's exactly what we needed. And I guess my concerns were not ever around, you know, the safety necessarily when we were there. It was just once we actually got there, I was like, there's no way that we can go explore and keep traveling and adjust to the new time zone. Like, it was, my body was rioting.
Yeah, no, it was all good. It was great. It was a really nice hotel room that we had. It was kind of weird checking in super early, knowing that we were going to check out essentially the same day. But you know what? That's what points does for us, right? And so we were able to save, I think that room would have been maybe $250-$300 for the night. So it wasn't the greatest point redemption by any means. But again, it just gave us peace and rest, basically. So I think we watched the final episode of House of the Dragon while laying in bed, and then we kind of repacked our stuff and headed to the airport. And immediately our goal was to check into our flight on China Airlines business class and to go to the lounge there. And this is one of the rare times that I think for both of us, having clear really saved us a lot of time. And so we both have the Platinum card, and the Amex Platinum pays for Clear for you. And if you're not familiar with Clear, that's the when you go to the airport, that's those oval looking things with the bright lights around them that kind of scans your face, and you get to skip even the pre-check line to use it. A lot of times they only really make sense to use if even the TSA pre-check line is really long. And in this case, there really wasn't a pre-check line. It was just Clear with pre-check or general. And the general line spanned 150, 200 people. It was absolutely nuts. But we had Clear, which, just so you know, without Amex Platinum, or basically it's $180 for the year, or 190 at this point, and Amex just credits that back to you. So it was amazing and saved us a lot of time.
Yeah. It did. It was one of the nice times to have Clear, because sometimes I feel like it just doesn't pay to get in that line, or they have a separate TSA pre-check that's much shorter.
Right.
So we're talking about the China Airlines lounge next, right?
Yeah. I'll let you share. I mean, that wasn't the best lounges of the lounges we were at, but it was really interesting, their rules, especially because it technically was a priority pass lounge, but I know you were the one that found out how the rules really worked.
Well, at least from my understanding, it seems like they have an allocation of space that they'll give. And at a certain point, they'll say literally they are at capacity for priority pass and members, and they only will grant access to non-priority pass holders. So having to be able to have eligibility to access that lounge through any other means aside from priority pass. So that was a little disappointing to see that there was like a quota on priority pass versus anyone else who would have access.
Right. And that was a really interesting thing because for us, we had business class, right? So, I mean, we had the full ticket to use the China Airlines lounge specifically. And after we checked in, there's people that was right behind us. They're like, hey, we're priority pass. And the woman at the check-in desk was like, hey, sorry, no priority pass after 7:30. And our flight was at 1 a.m. And so I know, Taryn, you were like, well, there's also a Virgin Atlantic lounge, which I think the picture on Priority Pass looked pretty cool, like a really nice bar and stuff. And you were like, oh, well, you know, let me go check that out. So you went, and that's, you know, they were like, hey, sorry, you know, only a certain amount of spaces. I think you said that it looked like the place was relatively empty, except for maybe three tables with Priority Pass section, and those were full. So they said no more, which was kind of crazy.
Yeah, it was just not something I had heard of before, although I think we encountered that actually at some of the other lounges when we were on the rest of this trip. But that was the first time that I had actually seen that in place, that we couldn't, you know, explore these different lounges, especially with so much time. But China Airlines was nice. I think that's a little unfair. We've got a pretty high bar for this trip, I think, of what is a great lounge. So on any other trip, this would still have been an excellent lounge.
Absolutely. And it was great because we kind of hung out there and we went right to our flight. This was our longest single flight. It was a 12-hour flight from San Francisco to Taipei, Taiwan. And I will say the business class setup, I'd never flown, or neither of us had flown China Airlines before. Their setup was great. This was a very, very cool product. Very, very comfortable, very nice. The amenities were great. I mean, Taryn, like, what did you think of the China Airlines long-haul business class setup?
I was really impressed. I think it's probably one of the most impressive, at least when we were flying it to date. And in terms of really nice space and seating, and I mean, even your toiletries, which is expected, you'll get a little bag that, you know, it's reusable, but the quality of that can vary. And it was like a Moschino bag, which is a designer bag, because it says it right on there. But I know, I was like, DeAndre, this is Moschino. You're just like, what?
Yeah, I know. I had never heard of the brand before.
And I was like, you're not leaving this on the plane. We're taking this. I will find a use for it. Because it was like a really cute clutch bag in like a really cool smoky gray color, like leather, with really pretty gold like lettering on the front. And I use that as like a purse, honestly, as an extra clutch bag through the rest of the trip. And it was beautiful.
And a quick segue to next week's episode where we're talking about Singapore. So talk about the fact I've never heard of Moschino as a brand before. When we were in Singapore, right, that expo center that had all the high-end brands, Balenciaga, Gucci, Louboutin, all the things, Hermes, like there was a Moschino store right there as well. So not that I doubted you by any means, but I'd never heard of the brand. And of course, I see now an entire store in like the most expensive of expensive malls there. So yes, I know you made sure that I did not get rid of it. So there are two Moschino bags in given to you.
And I gifted one that was also very much utilized on the trip. So I still feel that we did something good and we did not waste. And I think it was just really top notch. I mean, when I saw they had Johnny Walker Blue on the menu and then I could just keep drinking Johnny Walker Blue for this entire 12-hour flight. I mean, I had a couple. I didn't have as many as I could have. But I have never seen that level of top shelf, at least, again, to date, on any kind of business class experience like thus far. I mean, that was very extra in a fabulous way.
Yeah, I mean, and I know, of course, if you fly like high in like first class Emirates, right, you're going to get the Dom and all that. But this was, you know, this wasn't their first class. This is a business class product. And for those of you not familiar with the Scotch, you know, Johnny Walker Blue is their basically their most expensive bottle. I think it's what, like $250 for the bottle, $300 for the bottle. And so for that to just be kind of on demand was perfect.
Yes, it was great. It's the most Johnny Walker Blue I've had in many years. So it was a really fun flight.
So from there, we ended up going to, so we landed in Taipei, Taiwan, and we went to the China Airlines lounge, and the timing was actually perfect, relatively perfect. We had to wait about 20 to 30 minutes, but 15 of that was just actually walking to the lounge. And we got there right when it opened, and we were the first people through the gates or through the doors. And this lounge was incredible, and it had stone interior architecture. I mean, this place was phenomenal.
It felt like you left the airport and were going through like a secret cavern somewhere. But it was all very like modern and very cool. The way the walls like went all the way up with this like beautiful like stone that's exposed. So it really didn't feel like you were even in the airport anymore. And I mean, they had like the dumplings and steam buns and oh my gosh, the noodles. They had every, I mean, I felt very spoiled as soon as we got to Taiwan, actually.
Yeah, the like on demand, like pork noodle bar. I think that got us like super excited for like, oh my gosh, we are now in Asia. Like we're going to be having the most incredible food going forward. And it definitely set the bar high really, really well. It was really great. And we were there for a few hours. So that was a nice place to have a long layover.
It was really nice. The food was really good.
So our next flight, that was a 5-hour flight. Again, business class, China Airlines. It wasn't the same setup as our long haul. This one, the beds went mostly flat, but not fully. It was a kind of older setup. I think like you could actually hear the motor of the chair as it was kind of swinging. So it went not fully flat, maybe like to a 30, 45-ish degree angle, but it was okay. It was only a 5-hour flight. And basically we both kind of crashed on that. We basically ate and slept in that 5 hours. So it really wasn't super memorable. But the cool thing about that setup in business class for us was instead of us sitting in the center and having this giant kind of cabinetry around us, we were both on the window sitting next to each other. So we did have a nice kind of space together for just the two of us.
Yeah. I mean, I literally remember eating and crashing on that flight as well. And we had already been on such beautiful products and, you know, business class legs. So at that point, I was just very grateful to crash again and continue on our journey, really get on to get there.
And get there we did. So we landed in Bali, the airport code for that's DPS. And so we landed in Bali, arrived at the airport. And there's a few things I want you guys to take note of or bookmark this episode for when it comes to arriving in Bali, because this is going to save you an incredible amount of time. So there are three things that you should complete and you can complete ahead of time that will save you from being in very long lines. So the first is the tourist visa. You can do that online and make sure you select basically the temporary 30-day tourist visa. It's the B1 visa. That's going to cost you $35 per person to do. You complete everything online. You have to actually upload pictures of your passport. It takes probably 30 minutes for you to do everything. But once you do that, it basically you get your visa document immediately. You are allowed to use the e-gates. And for years, I heard that Bali's immigration process was one of the worst. It was hours and hours in line. Well, now they have e-gates, and we went through those, had almost no issues. We were good to go. However, there were so many people that were in the line for that did not complete their visa documentation. And that line was still very, very long. You easily would have been waiting, I don't even know, 45 minutes to an hour just for that line. And then secondly, there is your customs and declaration form. And so you have to get a QR code to be able to exit basically the airport. And so there were plenty of people that they had finally gotten their bags, they finally got their visa, and then they were stuck trying to complete all the information for this customs declaration form. And they're doing that on shoddy airport internet Wi-Fi. Well, we already had everything. And for the customs declaration form, we actually had to do that while we were in San Francisco, because there was only like a 1 or 2 day time frame before your flight, that because they allow you only a certain timeline before you get there to do it. So you can't do that weeks before like you could the visa or otherwise. And that's free to use. And so make sure you have that done. So those two things, you can exit the airport, no issues. And the final thing, this is something new Bali's doing. It's a tourist tax. It's about $10. Essentially, apparently the police or people in Bali can stop anyone at any given moment and said, hey, have you paid your tourist tax? And they want to see proof of it. We never got stopped, never got asked for it. And I'm seeing online, it's a 50-50. Some people are like, I'm not even bothering with it. Others are like, well, I'm doing it. The funds are supposed to support keeping Bali clean and safe and everything like that. We went ahead and did it either way, had proof of our documentation, but we never ever needed to show it. But I would recommend that you do it. And again, it's only $10 per person. Taryn, did you any feedback on like the airport experience and kind of getting there at all that you have?
Well, yeah, I just want to second that. Get all of this done while you're at home on your home Wi-Fi and ahead of time. And I promise it'll be worth it, and you will be very grateful when you are in the airport. But I think that, you know, the airport, like a lot of other places with transportation, when you're leaving, there's a lot of people yelling and trying to kind of talk to you, like, get a taxi, get a taxi. If you've been to Mexico or even the DR, I feel like there's a lot of places that we've been where it's very similar. But if you're not prepared, it could feel a bit overwhelming because they can be a bit aggressive, you know, trying to offer taxi services. But again, that's something that we're pretty accustomed to based on different places that we regularly stay that have a very similar transportation process.
Yeah, exactly what you said, right? It was just, we kind of pushed through that. Luckily, we were staying at a Hyatt property. It was the Alila Seminyak, and they had transportation. I had requested transportation through them. And so basically they had a guy with a sign that we had to find, and he came and grabbed us and basically put us on a vehicle. So we had about a 1 hour drive with traffic. Bali traffic is absolutely terrible. Apparently it's been getting even progressively worse over time. And we got to the Alila Seminyak. We stayed 2 nights there. We had an ocean view suite. We used points for this. And so it would have been $625 per night. And we ended up using 40,000 points per night. So we used 80,000 points total there. That actually was our worst redemption. That was 1.57 cents per point. So our worst redemption of the whole trip. But again, we had an ocean view suite. It was a beautiful, beautiful property. Taryn, what do you think? I mean, that was our first time, I think, for both of us staying at an Alila specifically, and we were right on the beach there in Seminyak.
It was beautiful. I really enjoyed my first Alila. I'm positive it won't be my last. I know one of the things we were a little surprised about, because we are more familiar with the other brands, you know, in the Hyatt family, is that there was no preferred or club lounge floor, right? Or a business.
Right. Yeah. No lounge preferred. No, yeah. No lounge area access.
Yeah, usually there's an access for that. That is one of the perks, you know, of having the status and things like that. So that was something that was surprising, but it didn't feel at all like we were missing out from like a luxury standpoint because of that, which is cool. The location is fantastic. Seminyak is one of the busier areas. If you're going to go to Bali, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, shops, a lot of really, you know, some of the best tattoo shops in the entire, you know, area of Bali are known that are in Seminyak. But it is congested and traffic is pretty bad. And, you know, I was glad that we were able to be so close and convenient that we could just access, you know, walking around. Like, we literally just walked out the front and went shopping in Seminyak, and we met up with friends that we met at an EDM festival that were also in Seminyak at the same time, which was really cool. So I thought the location was great. And yeah, it's definitely more crowded, but I think that's why I was so happy that we were going to get the chance to do everything and explore each one of the areas, because you can't not go.
Yeah, it was really nice the fact that it was the proximity that it was to the airport. And I mean, it was pretty much gridlock getting there, but you're right. Very beautiful property. Our room was great. The one thing about the beach is not, well, at least when we were there, wasn't swimmable. The surf was pretty strong the entire time. But I'm surprised you didn't mention the amount of dogs running around the beach with all their owners. I mean, that was kind of the coolest thing that you don't really see is kept, well provided for dogs that are just leash free and having the time of their lives.
Well, this is not the only time that I saw Bali dogs living the best life. And I, you know, that is, if reincarnation's a thing, I want to come back as a dog in Bali, because they were everywhere having fun and they were cared for. Even if you didn't see a collar necessarily, you would see there was a person who was taking care of them. And it was really pretty. And the kites were so high. I'm going to ask you to quantify, because I'm just going to say airplane height. So how would you say those kites were that they had? And some of them look like ships, like really cool ships.
Yeah. So what Taryn's referring to, so there's, you know, you imagine the kites that you'd fly as a kid, right? Well, you would look up in the sky and these kites are insanely high up and they're kind of almost permanently there. And so part of the reason why I think this, that you don't swim because the surf is so high is because the winds are so strong. So these kites are up there. I don't think they're quite airplane height, but my drone goes about, I fly it up to 400 feet, which is about the regulation. And they were probably twice that high. So maybe closer to 1,000 feet up in the air. So I'm more so surprised at their string that's that long. And the cool thing is a lot of them have like LED lights on them. So at night, all these kites look like stars in the sky with like green or red colors. It was really, really cool. It was just something that you wouldn't see elsewhere. I've never seen that anywhere else in the world.
Yeah. I forgot that it was like lit up at night, kind of like their own lighthouses. You know, a warning, the ships and other planes and things coming in of where they are, is really cool, different place. And, I didn't miss having that preferred option.
Yeah, it was really nice. One thing to point out, so a couple things on the food and cost and beverage side. So this is an Alila, so it's not an all inclusive, just a regular hotel. We ate and had drinks there a couple times. And those are probably the most expensive kind of drinks and food that we had outside of maybe one place in Ahmed, which we'll get to. But just so you know, if you're there, if you get out of the hotel, you can find very inexpensive and very, very, very good meals outside there. Now, to be clear, the food was great. The buffet at this place, and you know, Taryn, I love a good buffet. I love a good breakfast. This buffet was one of the most insane buffets I have ever seen. I don't even know. The thing must have been 30 yards long. I mean, there are options you had between fruits and the honey. I can't even go into it. We took videos. It's awesome. It's on our stories. Most insane buffet I've ever seen. But outside of that, the food and everything and drinks are a little bit more expensive if you kind of stick to just the hotel.
And that's something to keep in mind if you're going to be in the more popular, like touristy areas, is that your cost for your hotel as well as for food, not everywhere, but a lot of the locations that are in those areas are going to be a lot higher than if you are outside of, you know, those major tourist areas like Seminyak and Ubud.
And the only last thing I'll say probably about our time at Seminyak is there's a really popular / famous beach club there called Potato Head. That's actually is literally right next to the Alila Seminyak. So we actually could just walk out the Alila and then walk on the sand and walk into Potato Head. A cover to get in, they had like DJs and EDM music and stuff like that. The night we went, it was a little more of a lounge-ish feel. Again, expensive drinks there. It was okay. Kind of a cool vibe to it. The building structure looks really cool. We also had live music at the Alila, both nights that we were there. And so I think, you know, if you really want that vibe, you absolutely can go, but we had a great time just watching the sunset, also having drinks and kind of hearing the live music that they were playing and the DJ that they had at the Alila. So I didn't really see that Potato Head had a lot of extra value, but we also weren't there on like a Friday or Saturday night. So didn't really, you know, get to experience a huge turn up if they have one by any means. Hey, it's DeAndre here, and we're going to interrupt this episode real quick to tell you about two great opportunities for all of you. First, join our private Facebook community to connect with fellow points and miles enthusiasts, get exclusive tips and updates, as well as get your questions answered directly by me and others in the community. And if you're looking to level up your points and miles skills, we've partnered with Lux Travel Hacks to offer you 50% off their online course that will teach you all the basics you need to know to learn how to travel in business or first class, all for less than you'd pay for economy. Don't forget to use the code BOLDLYGO at checkout. You'll find all the details and links to both of these in the show notes. Now, let's get back to our episode. So, after the Alila and Seminyak, we actually then went to Salat. And so that was a really, really cool experience. But before we talk about where we stayed in Salat, we're going to talk about just getting there, because that in its own was an adventure. So we got picked up by Wyan. And one thing you'll actually learn if you go to Bali is that they all have names based on the order of when they were born, right? So if you're a firstborn, your name Wyan. Male or female, your name is Wyan. I forgot the name for number two, but number three is Made, and there's four, and then a number five, it resets again. And so back to Wyan, right? So you kind of know exactly where someone was born in their family, whether there's five kids or nine kids, by their name, which is really cool. So we got picked up by Wyan, had a long drive, lots of traffic. One thing I also learned, there's not really highways in Bali, so you're just going down a lot of two-lane roads. But our first stop on the way to Salat was a shaman experience that Taryn wanted to really embrace. And I'll let Taryn, you should share what was that like for you?
Yeah. Also, the thing you should know with the people who are going to be your drivers are also essentially your tour guides, because if we're going to go from here to here, especially a really good driver and tour guide, which Wyan was a recommendation from my friend Daniela, who had also been to this shaman. So I was very excited to get to really see the sights with Wyan, as well as to meet this shaman. So it was something that I went very open-minded and excited, but not, you know, expecting too much. I've seen psychics. I've seen, you know, I feel them always open in everything that I approach. And I wanted to approach that the same way, but I didn't have any expectations, which is good, because they would have been very much exceeded because this shaman knew, I mean, and I love this about the way that they look at medicine, is it is like, you know, physical, mental, spiritual, you know, it's addressing all different aspects of yourself. So the physical body, and that was something I was really shocked, is he knew about like different health concerns, like where in my body they were located, like stuff that, you know, he couldn't have Googled. And I also, well, I mean, he was on his phone a little bit, but I don't anticipate that is exactly how he's planning these things by any means, because the stuff that he knew about me is not anything you could find, even if you knew you were going to be meeting me and trying to predict things about my past, about what I would do for a living. And I mean, I saw your face when you were recording it, DeAndre. I mean, I went in very open-minded. What was your experience watching this and knowing me?
Yeah, so I'll be real. I'm not really about that frou-frou stuff. And so I was like, you know, I'm going to go and I'll be supportive. And I was just going to kind of sit there and watch. And he actually said, yeah, go ahead, record, which I was not expecting. You know, I was just going to be respectful and just kind of watch, because kind of it was in their family temple area. And it wasn't like this was, you know, we walked into this big mosque. It was literally like we kind of stopped on the side of the road, went into a neighborhood, and then kind of walked into this family's house, and they're like cooking their meal and stuff while he's, you know, getting ready and doing his thing. And so, yeah, he was saying things that he knew, things that literally no one else would know unless they knew you, and not just like knew of you, but like knew you like intimately. And so I was, I was very, very impressed, and surprised actually. I mean, it was very interesting, even though that's not my type of thing. It was very interesting to be able to observe that. And it was, I wouldn't say it was a huge like religious psychic type thing. It was just he was just kind of feeling you out and just being able to gather information. It was so interesting.
Yeah, I mean he knew things, and even if it's something that you know you guys might not be open to from that spiritual thing, it was not overly religious to DeAndre's point. And I'll sell you on the physical. He did this thing where he cracked my lower back. He like got behind me, did something, and it completely expanded my entire lower back. And I have never had that part of my spine like crack and decompress and all of that. And it was like every bad night of sleep I had had for the past like 10 years in my lower back was just like gone. And I still don't know what he did. So I think that, you know, there's different reasons that people might go to a shaman, which is, you know, physical ailments, or they want to have more about the future, about their spiritual wellness. And I think that if you have any reasons that you're curious, you know, I encourage you to go. And if you are going to go, obviously at the end, I will have some really great contacts in terms of if you are looking for a driver and you want to find Wyan. You cannot just Google Wyan, I promise. To DeAndre's point, it is a very common name. So let us know and I will share that information.
Yeah, so if you reach out to us directly, either on Instagram or shoot us an email, support@boldlygo.world, we'll actually get you his contact info for Wyan, and he would be an amazing, amazing driver and tour guide for you and your time in Bali. And so the next place he took us after the shaman was to the Dallas Warung. And so you're going to see Warung all over the place. It's spelled W-A-R-U-N-G. A Warung is like a local hole in the wall, almost what we'd call in the States a dive, but it's not a bar. It's just a restaurant where they're going to have local food. You're likely not going to have AC. You know, there's going to be a guy walking up to you or a girl walking in sandals, taking your order. Very, very chill place, but you're going to get amazing, amazing food, even like a full dinner, and probably spend like $3 to $4 per person. And we did this one in an area that the Warung actually overlooks some of the rice fields and rice terraces. And that's where we did the Bali swing and lunch. And so if you ever seen the pictures or videos of the swings in Bali, I think Taryn and I, we both thought there was just like one, but there's actually a lot of places where you can do the Bali swing. So they've got this thing kind of figured out. But we've got amazing shots. We've done reels. So again, check our stories. We have this highlighted on the Boldly Go Instagram as well. But Taryn, you had this amazing, amazing photo shoot on the swing, red dress. I mean, what'd you think of it?
I feel like I reverted into a child, and I wasn't thinking about the photos being taken of me at all. And I was just like, wee, because it was so fun. the dress was flowing. The swing is actually just a lot of fun. It's not scary. And I was really just kind of enjoying that feeling of flying through the air freely. And I was really glad that you are such a master with the drone. And then we had, the operator who is like jumping in the air, grabbing things, as well as recording these videos of me right there. And he did a really great job too, because I was really not trying to work the camera at all. Like I totally didn't even think about doing that until I was done. because it was just fun. And yeah, there's a million swings. We thought there was like one swing, and there's a whole area that we went through, and it was like multiple different swings. And I liked that the place we were at, like we got there, they had it set up very quickly, and then we had lunch. We could have a beautiful view, and the food was really, really good. I think I had the crispy duck there for the first time, which I ended up having. Yeah, it was there. That was really delicious. I love duck, and I had that in any place after that lunch that I saw it on the menu, because it was so delicious. And it is one of the favorite things that I ate when I was in Bali.
And what I really liked also is why we skipped a lot of places that seemed very crowded and touristy, said Bali Swing restaurant, whatever it may be. And this was kind of one of the last places on this strip of road that had, again, traffic and people. And we got there and it was very calm, very nice. There was other people eating and dining, but it didn't feel busy, didn't feel crowded at all. And so, again, having a great tour guide can really help with that, which was really nice.
Yeah. I mean, actually, Wyan was just going to take us to Ubud to do like one thing with the shaman initially. And then we were going to arrange our transport, right, from there to go to Salat. And after we were with him, he was like, well, no, I can take you. And again, there's the value of a really great tour guide. We already had our suitcase and our luggage and all our stuff in the car. And he said it would be no problem. And he added so many different places we could stop on the way, which were spectacular. And some of them we said no to just because we were meeting up with friends later. And there are things that we knew that we were going to do with our friends. So we also didn't want to do all the things before we were all meeting up together in Bali. So there's definitely some things we said no to. And there's some stuff that we did, you know, a couple times. And I think that those are the fun things. And having a good driver is your tour guide and kind of is your destiny if you are going to be traveling through these different areas and there's traffic. You want someone who knows where they're going and who can provide the experience that you're looking for.
Yeah, one of those things that we did twice, so once just the two of us and then again with friends at a different location, was the coffee kind of plantation stop where they show you how they make the coffee and prepare it, all those different things. So if you didn't know, some of the world's most exclusive and most expensive coffee you can actually find in Bali specifically, and that's the Luwak coffee. And so a Luwak is an animal that looks kind of like a large ferret per se, and basically it essentially eats the coffee beans itself, the coffee beans, but doesn't digest it. And so it poops it out in this kind of corn looking thing, and then foragers find it. And they actually then turn it into Luwak coffee. And I know it sounds really probably gross. You're like, oh, man, but this is very, very interesting when you actually see it. It's not pooped like you would think it would look. Again, it looks like just coffee beans that are kind of cemented together. But it has a very distinct flavor, a very distinct taste. And there, it's very, very inexpensive versus trying to get it anywhere else. Because, I mean, literally, like, you're getting it from where it's made. And that was a really cool experience. But also, they make other things, teas. I know, Taryn, you really loved, I think, was it the mangosteen tea?
Yeah, I bought some of that as well. They had a lot of really beautiful teas and other coffees that they made. I think there was like the avocado coffee was really cool. I mean, there was a whole lot of different things you could taste. There's like a whole tasting tray. And in both of the places that we went that did the, you know, the whole Luwak experience with the coffee had like the full tasting where you'll get to try basically an assortment of everything. And then you can pick what you want. And the official Luwak coffee is going to be the most expensive, but it's not expensive based on where you are compared to your point if you had to buy it and you're somewhere else. But yeah, I mean, part of you when you're watching this, you're just kind of like, who invented this? Like, who was like, let's take this and make something that we're going to drink, which everyone laughs. And I think that's a question that probably everybody asks on that tour because it feels like a very like, how did we get here? But when you taste it, the flavor profile is very profound. I mean, it's very earthy. It has a lot of like layers and nuance to the flavor. So, and very low caffeine. Apparently that's something that also gets kind of removed in the process. So I love coffee, a good coffee, but I can't have too much caffeine. So this was something that really appealed to me because I could enjoy it and not have to worry about being wired all night. And it wasn't, you know, decaf. It was a much more robust flavor. And I encourage if you're there, you should try it.
Yeah, and that's what I don't really buy a lot of stuff when I travel, but that was one of the things we bought. We got a nice can to bring back home, which is really cool. And before we move on, can't forget to mention the fact that I think for maybe both of us, we actually at that plantation that was unique, we didn't ever really get to do again, was we got to pet a Luwak, but also they had bats there. We actually got to hold the bats, almost like they were little puppies hanging from us.
Oh my gosh, that was so great. And they were babies. They were very like small and just adorable. So they were just kind of hanging from our arms. And it was cute because you could feed them their little fruit bats. You could feed them little pieces of like banana, and they were very gentle and very sweet. And nowhere else would actually let you completely fully pet a Luwak, and they were just relaxing. They were sleeping. They're nocturnal. So they were just sleeping on platforms here and there. There's no cages. They were just hanging out. And I always love a opportunity to connect with nature. So obviously there was a lot of bonus points there for that.
And so with Wyan taking us, we actually then got to our destination after that. He offered a couple other places. By that point, we were both just tired. We had done a lot. And I don't know the exact price, so don't quote me on this, but I'm going to say it was probably that entire day with Wyan. So he drove us essentially around 2.5 to almost 3 hours. We stopped at all these places. I think we paid about $50, maybe $55. And then I tipped him extra on top of that. So it really was not bad to have a cost for a tour guide to take us multiple places, all these different stops, and hang out with us for the day, which was awesome. So the next place we went to was in Salat, and this was the Kosei Bali Airbnb. And this place was the most Instagrammable, beautiful place either of us have ever stayed. It was a rare find on Airbnb. I kind of was randomly scrolling, found it. I just saw the cover photo of it, and I was like, oh my gosh, we have to stay here. It was only $300 a night, and we stayed there for 2 nights. Again, all this is on our stories if you want to see this place. And we're going to link it in the show notes as well. But Taryn, how cool was this place? It was insane.
This was completely another world. And I'm so happy you found this and that we went there, because this was a completely different experience. And that is something I want to encourage everyone to do. If you go to Bali, don't just spend the time in the big cities. Go and experience some of these more remote areas, because this was a bamboo house in the rice field. It was green and beautiful, and there was this huge mountain behind it. And we had an overlook that we could climb up to, and we had our own pool, we had our own swing, and even we had all of this space. We're so remote. And the fact that they still had, like, not just, you know, food, but like essentially room service, that they would walk all of the food all the way out to where we were, and you still have that privacy, and hearing the frogs, and it's like the sound machine setting that you have for like rainforest plus this. And it was a very different experience. It was beautiful.
It was fantastic. The main person that took care of us, her name was Wyan also. She great service, but just to kind of give you a visual, we basically would walk out of the bedroom, and then all you see in front of you is the multi-layered kind of tiered rice terraces in front of us, a couple workers in the fields, just green, lush, vibrant colors. And it was overcast the couple days we were there, but the day that we left, the skies were blue and clear, and we had this amazing view of Mount Agung, which is a volcano, actually. So it's this huge mountain in the view. And so the location is just pristine. It's beautiful, beautiful place to stay. They actually have tours and stuff that they would take. They'll take you on hikes and do different things. They have all these packages, and you have meals that get sent to you as well. So every single meal they bring to you. We didn't really do any things. We just kind of used that place to relax and hang out. But we did have a massage. So we did pay for a massage, which massage is there, just so you know, in Bali, a 90-minute massage is about $15. So 60-minute massage, about $10. So it's like $5 per 30 minutes. So you can get some pretty amazing massages. We had a few in our trip there, but it was great. I mean, but we just chose to relax.
Yeah, it was a little piece of nature paradise. And I am really glad that we went there. And they had multiple other properties as well, but you never saw another person there in terms of another guest or another place. So a lot of them, I think we saw when you had flown the drone and we're like, oh, look, they have another one there. They have another one there, but nothing is facing anyone else. So it really is like ultimate privacy and just feeling like the most amazingness with nature. And actually the Wi-Fi was pretty good considering you're out in the middle of nature. I do want to mention that because sometimes that's the sacrifice that you have to make in somewhere that is so beautiful and in the middle of sort of nothing is the Wi-Fi is tendency to be bad, but the bugs actually weren't that bad and the Wi-Fi was better than I expected.
Yeah, the bugs weren't bad at all. Two things I'll point out just in case you do want to book this yourself, which we'd highly recommend. So two things, there is no air conditioning. That was not a problem. It's kind of in a valley. It was very cool. The evenings were cool. So it was quite comfortable. There were fans in the room. So I don't think we ever were just drenched in sweat from being too hot. And the other thing is the bed is in mosquito netting as well. So this place, like Taryn said, it's a bamboo house. There's bugs around. They weren't terrible, but there's bugs, there's frogs, there's lizards. You know, you are out there with nature, but it is probably the most highest form and the best form of glamping that I've seen with the most incredible view for not expensive at all. So after that, we went to Ahmed. So all that we've talked about has just been so far to this point, a couple days of travel, a couple days in Seminyak, two nights in Salat. And then the next place we stayed was where we stayed the rest of our time in Bali. That was seven nights in a villa. This was Villa Paradiso. It had three master bedrooms and one cottage. And this was a place that was actually a friend did a charity auction booking and got this. And that's what caused and turned this into basically a friend's trip. So we had a bunch of us staying in this villa. And it was in Ahmed, which is on essentially the eastern part of Bali. So Seminyak is the western, Salat was kind of in the middle, and this was the eastern side. And we had an incredible time here, and this place was gorgeous.
Yeah, the villa was fabulous. This is all through Sojourn Ventures, and they solely do bookings, experiences in charity auctions and other things that benefit charities. So, and they even have locations, other locations in Bali, as well as locations in Italy and Spain. So once you get there, basically everything is taken care of. There is a staff of people. If there's food, there's ways you can get it. There was a restaurant that was right outside the gates of where we were in this beautiful villa. This one in particular, it had a capacity for eight people. We were a smaller number than that, but we definitely made up for it in spirit and probably our American loudness. So it was really fun to get to meet up with friends and enjoy this. And they made it really special. Like they did a big dinner on that last night, which I think is probably already one of my favorite things, in addition to the gorgeous pool that we had that like spanned throughout the house. And it was just exceptional. But we had like a local show, and I don't want to ruin what it is in case you go there. But it was really special and a complete like Balinese comfort meal that we were served in a beautiful outdoor dining area that was in our villa itself. But it really anything that we wanted, laundry. I mean, you name it, if we needed it, a ride, an excursion, they had something for basically every aspect of this adventure.
Yeah, it was quite incredible. Again, we stayed there for seven nights, and I would highly, highly recommend. You don't really hear Ahmed talked about a lot when you hear people going to Bali. A lot of times you're going to Seminyak or Ubud. Ahmed was a really, really cool beach town, and it reminded me, it's probably one of the places I've stayed that's the closest reminded me of the time I spent in Thailand. And it's just a really cool, quiet place. And also, I've never seen as many dive shops in a single location anywhere in the world as I have there. I mean, almost every other building, and imagine 100 buildings in a row, every other one is a different dive shop. And that kind of speaks to the quality of the water and the beaches and just kind of the vibe that's down there.
Yeah, they're known for their snorkeling, their beaches, and their diving. So even if you don't enjoy diving, expect some of the like most beautiful beaches and snorkeling that you could just go right off the beach, which we ended up doing at some point. But it really does have that diving vibe, which means it's relaxed. It is not that expensive, and there's a lot of different variety as well.
Yeah, we had food in different places, so we stopped at a few warungs, and one of them, I remember distinctly, it was, five or six of us, we all ate, I think someone had a beer, all these different things, and we got the final bill, and it was $13 US for all of us, right? It was just like, oh my gosh, how is this even possible? And it was such good food. It was absolutely incredible. The beaches were great. Just for time, I mean, we're not going to talk through all the things that we did, but we had a really amazing time. Lipa Beach was a highlight for us. We went to La Gria, which was actually a really high-end hotel that had like a nice restaurant and rooftop bar. I thought that place was really cool.
Oh, that place was gorgeous, and the food was really nice as well. And then that sunset place that we went at the end, that was one of like the most beautiful sunsets that we saw on that trip. And Made, our driver there, he was also like kind of, everything that you just mentioned. Again, you need a good driver and someone who, because they're your tour guide, and he would give us recommendations for dinner, or what kind of dinner experience do we want? We want the sunset. Well, what kind of experience? Like, he had the best recommendations for what our group wanted every day, every step of the way. And that made it really special as well.
He actually, going back to that, so that place was called Sunset Point. We showed up there. He already made reservations for us, which was incredible. And so our table, the view was unreal. And so I mentioned already the Agung, the volcano. We were on one side of it. Here, we had this amazing view of the sunset with the volcano kind of cascading down into the beach. And I can't tell you how amazing it was to see this view in person. We took pictures, of course. I flew my drone. Also, as a drone flyer, outside of Iceland, this was the most amazing place to fly drones, that people didn't care. I actually flew my drone right out of the restaurant, or the Sunset Point, which is basically a restaurant bar type area. They didn't care. They're like, yeah, go for it. It was amazing. Great visuals. Such a beautiful place.
Yeah, that was gorgeous. And then once some of our friends came, we decided that we were also going to get tattoos. So again, you can look at our stories. I'm not going to bore you with the details. But Bali is a place that if you are someone who loves tattoos, it was a really meaningful thing. I think a lot of us had really bonded, and it was a really cool way, especially for people who, again, all of us already have tattoos. So it was not like we were taking our first leap in the deep end here, getting our first tattoo in Bali. Although, if you've always wanted one, why not? I'm really happy that I have this reminder of like how I felt in that moment. And even the tattoo shop had a view of Agung, actually. It's like this beautiful, I've never seen anything like a tattoo shop with that kind of view when you're getting your work done. And they were exceptional as well. So it was a really great experience.
And of course, seeing as Taryn and I are both divers, avid divers, we made sure to have a day of diving. We did a day with two different dives. One of those dives was actually a U.S. Army transport wreck that was just kind of off the coast, and that was really cool. And we saw beautiful sea turtles. I mean, it was very vibrant down there. So then the water was crystal clear. So it was pretty amazing. It was fantastic. And the only last thing I was going to add also is that we did, if you ever see the picture of what they still call the gates of heaven, right, where it's usually a person in the middle with like this reflection pool image, we did that experience. And that experience is a little bit different from what you would expect, but it was really, really cool and super worth it. So that's actually called Lempuyang Temple, so the gates of heaven. And we had to wake up early for this one. And this was also our last full day there. So it was kind of not fun to have to wake up at 4 a.m. But the cool thing is being in Ahmed, it was only a 30-minute drive versus people that had to wake up at 2 a.m. and drive like 2 hours from Ubud. And there's a whole process, but you basically get a ticket, and that ticket has a number, and you want to get there super early, because we got there maybe, I don't know, probably 20 minutes before they opened, and our ticket number was something like 30, whereas people that came maybe 5 minutes after us got up to 60, right? So I can imagine people were probably there waiting a very long time. But long story short, you finally get up to the temple, and the cool thing is about this temple, the view. So you take this picture in this temple, and it's a full shot behind you of the volcano. And I will say this, and this kind of ruins the mystique, but I think it is good to people to know, when you see the reflection on the bottom, that's actually someone holding a mirror under the camera to make it look like there's this giant, amazing pool of water. It's a very cool, very beautiful image, but it's actually just a mirror, and which is commonly joked about. But even still, it makes for an amazing, amazing, amazing picture, which I'm sure you've seen on our stories, and we're going to actually have a reel about it as well. But it was an incredible time. That was one of the really cool things that we did. And at first, I wasn't super excited to do it. I thought it was going to be kind of overblown and touristy, but I'm really glad we did it.
I'm also glad that we did go as early as we did, because you could tell that, especially with the amount of time, they'd give people a lot more shots than you think they will. Once it's their turn. So, and I mean, I wasn't prepared with enough poses either. I mean, we were watching and they still, I feel like, gave an extra one, and that ended up being my favorite picture, 'cause I just jumped, and these guys are great photographers. So, what they're doing is working, and these have become famous images that in Bali for a reason. So as long as you're, you know, having a plan and going to try to get there early, you should definitely check it out. But don't go in with the expectation that you can kind of stroll in at any time.
Yeah, absolutely not. And those guys, they just take pictures for tips. There is a small cost to actually get into the temple and such as well. And if you ever heard someone that went to Bali maybe 5 or 10 years ago, and they were like, oh man, I did this, but I waited this long line and it was terrible, et cetera, et cetera. So apparently this whole like ticketing process where they give you an assigned number is relatively new over the last couple of years. So before, you would just get there, then you had to literally stand in line for, you know, hours, a couple hours, as what people go one by one. But now you actually can, you have a ticket, they call the numbers out, you can actually walk around the temple, take other pictures, kind of relax and sit, and you don't have to just sit in this line for all that time, which was nice. And the last thing that we did is we went to the water palace as well. Like, you and I, Taryn, we got to hold this giant yellow python, which was really cool. I think the python weighed like 40 pounds. I mean, this thing was massive. And it was awesome. I mean, overall, Ahmed was fantastic.
It was a great location, and we were able to, I feel like, do all of the things, which I think was one of the best parts. And I loved actually wearing the ceremonial wear when we were at the temple as well. I want to mention that, especially you're planning your photo, you're going to spend all this time. If your outfit doesn't cover your shoulders and you're a woman, they're going to cover that for you. So just as a heads up that you will have to cover that when you are taking those photos. And they have some very interesting rules about poses that you're allowed to do and not allowed to do. So just pay attention to that as well. You don't want to get in trouble.
And guys, that's pretty much our entire time in Bali, which was about 2 full weeks if you include the 2 days that it took to get there. So absolutely amazing, absolutely memorable time. I know we got a little bit technical with the points and miles and how we got there as well, but it was a fantastic time and I absolutely loved it. Before we wrap this one up, Taryn, any last final thoughts you might have yourself?
Yeah, I just want to speak about very briefly the energy. And that's something I heard a lot about. And I feel like I didn't really understand it until after being in Bali and talking to the people. And it's something we didn't touch on very briefly. It is almost all Hindu in Bali, which is different than if you look at all of Indonesia as a whole. And obviously they practice Hinduism, and you can really feel this beautiful energy of practicing gratitude and appreciation for what you have. And, you know, even if you don't have very much. And that's something that I feel was very apparent in every person that we would encounter in every part of Bali. They genuinely were grateful that we were there. They were wanting to be helpful. And it came from a really positive place, not a place of just looking for a tip, although obviously we did do that when we had good service. But it was a really beautiful place, and it's electric energy. So it's a very unique place, and I understand why the hype is there. So I encourage you to definitely check that out and go to Bali.
And it wasn't, I think you sent it to me that Indonesia just got ranked number one as like world's most generous country.
I believe they were number one, yeah. And there was a couple of different measurements, but after being there, it was really easy to see that they really earned that. And I haven't been to obviously all of the places, so yeah.
Yeah, I would say from a niceness, generosity standpoint, the only other country I think that came as close was our time in Oman. And so I think it was absolutely true. I think Singapore actually was number three or four on that list also. So I would say great things about both of those. And my final thought I will add is I'm surprised you didn't point it out. If for the listeners, Taryn's wearing her Karma shirt that she actually got in Seminyak, which was a really cool shirt when we went shopping. And so I think it fits the vibe as well.
Oh, that's only if you're watching us on video. If you're driving, don't worry about it. You don't need to look it up. Okay, well, come back next week as we continue our journey with our next stop, Singapore. We'll explain where we stayed, how we got around, and wrap up with what we did to get home, all using points and miles.
This was a great one, guys. Stay tuned for next week. We'll have more for you as well. Thanks for sticking with us. We know this is a little bit of a long one, but this was a 2-week trip, and we wanted to give you guys all the facts, all the information, and all the great things that we did while down in Bali. Couple of reminders for you. If you enjoyed this episode today, please be sure to give us a follow on all the social media platforms, as well as sign up for our newsletter to get insider information. And don't forget to like, share, subscribe, tell your friends, do all the things, and we'll catch you next week.
Thanks for tuning in to the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast, brought to you by Boldly Go. Hit that follow button so you don't miss out on new episodes. For deeper insights and to level up your travel game with our strategies, make sure to follow us on our social media platforms and sign up for our newsletter to stay in the loop. Head over to www.boldlygo.world to learn more. As DeAndre is not operating through this podcast as a fiduciary and/or financial advisor, this should not be considered personal financial advice. The information covered and posted has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The strategies and results referenced on this site, while proven, are not guaranteed. While most who apply the principles referenced will achieve similar results, you may not yourself. Your results will vary and depend on many factors that may be in or out of your control, but include factors such as your credit score, financial status, business experience, etc. It is your responsibility to consume and implement these recommendations at your own risk. We cannot be held responsible for any failure to do so.
Luxury flights and hotels can be had for free. The world of points and miles sounds too good to be true, but it's actually real, but only if you know what you're doing.
On Frequent Miler on the Air, Greg and I'm Nick, discuss all the ways to earn points and miles and use them for outsized value.
Join us every Friday for our full episodes and every Tuesday for our quick, single-topic coffee break episodes.
See you there.